the 16th bowl. Catholic boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. And Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning. Seth Merrow live from the backstretch, coming up a little bit later on, the weekly calendar with Teresa Gennaro. We'll also be joined by Matt Hagerty from the Daily Racing Forum, talk a little bit Albany Law Conference and Jockey Club Roundtable and more. But as always on a Wednesday morning, joined by one of the Clancy brothers this morning, Sean Clancy. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Talk a little Saratoga special, talk the jump race coming up and whatnot. I'm going to let you start because I read it last night, a nice column, and I have to admit, I did not know her at all. I don't know how I missed, because certainly with the passing of Carmen Barrera a few days ago, boy, the buzz was around the track, and I just had never had any interaction with her. But I read your cup of coffee column, and it was a nice tribute to the passing of Carmen Barrera. And clearly, over the years, you had plenty of interaction with her.
Yeah, I mean, she was just one of those great racetrackers. I mean, just born and bred for the racetrack. Worked in horse and relations. Was in charge of kind of getting any, you know, if you needed a box or needed a seat or you're running a horse or whatever. And she just did it in this amazing style of kind of real New Yorker, which I love, that kind of quick, like, to the point, get something done, but also very courteous, and not courteous, but just genuine, looking out for you, always kind of just trying to help out. And you know, she was just she's just part of the fabric here. I mean, she was always in the winner's circle. She was always, and I actually didn't use it in my column, and I thought of one story later. Was when Chad Brown won a stake here, and he had his two girls with him, and he finished everything, the interview and the scrum and everything, and he went looking. He kind of was like looking for his daughters, and he couldn't find them, and you know, he got real kind of panicky. I was kind of walking with him, and he ran up the stairs and looked and ran here and there, and then. Finally gets a call, and it's Carmen, and he's like, "You have my kids?" And she's like, "Of course I have your kids. What do you think? Why, you know, don't worry about that. Are you crazy?" You know, and it was so funny that, you know, she just had it all taken care of. You know, like, she just got the two kids. They were back in her office, just like totally safe and sound, of course. And I just remember that was so Carmen, to be able to do that in that, in the moment of, you know, the mayhem. And it was like, it was a big race, sure. The madness of the winner's circle, and, you know, Chad's there, he just run the horse, and he's doing all this stuff, and she just casually got the two kids and, you know, had them with her, like, you know, had it covered. And that's the way she just had everything covered. I mean, she was here for 40 years, and she was just a friend to everybody, and just, you know, just will be so sorely missed here. I mean, she just was like, she was the you know, the every person, you know. She was just like the little guy, or she just, like, every valet and every, I'd text from Ralph Thoreau and Sal Russo and people that just, like, you just forget that this is one big giant family that, you know, we spend a lot of time together, and, you know, you spend more time with these people than you do your family, really, the way racing is. So, you know, 60 years old, just a shock to everybody. I
mean, yeah, that was real, the buzz just, the other day, yeah, as I came into the racetrack, because it was very unexpected. And so everybody was kind of shocked. Yeah, and I had David O'Rourke in the other day, and I said to him, it's tough when you lose someone, like, because it's the institutional memory. Those are the people you can go to and say, how was this done then? And, geez, we tried this. What happened to this? And she'd been around long enough that she had that kind of institutional memory. You mentioned born and bred racetracker. For folks who made the name sounds familiar, it should. She was the niece of Las Barrera, and her dad won the Belmont Stakes.
Something, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So again, along with Mary Lou Whitney, a couple of sad occurrences during this race meet, which has otherwise been a very good race meet. So don't want to do 180, but essentially let's go back and talk some of the racing on this past weekend. I want to get some of your thoughts because there were a couple of phenomenal performances. And first, we'll take a look at the stretch run of the four-star Dave and Got Stormy. Had Mark Cassian on Thursday, and he said, well, I'll let the owner kind of decide on this depending on how the horse is working. And he was in on Thursday, and Mark said she was out this morning and she is working well, so it looks like all systems go. And I guess so. Got Stormy, the number six horse, not only makes this nice late run to win and win by a chart margin of 2.5, but a course record, which she smashes again a week after winning the Della Rose. This was just another one of the great performances at this meet.
This is a phenomenal performance. It was an interesting dynamic between owner and trainer. I think the owner definitely was, yeah, you know, kind of wanted to run. I kind of made the mistake. I said to Mark Cassie, I said, well, how often does Gary Barber override you? And he said, no, he didn't override me. And I'm like, okay. But then Gary Barber said, like, he was not going to take no for an answer. I mean, she was running. So it was an interesting kind of dynamic between those two. Mark said, it was great. You know, Alan Jerkins said to me a long time ago, he said, run them when they're good, yeah, and rest them when they're not. And I think in today's world, we've gotten so cookie cutter with the, you know, all the speed numbers and figures and everybody analyzing and everybody critiquing what you're doing. Those days of doing those kind of moves, they're so few and far between anybody even does it. Look, she had a very easy race a week ago and won, and she came back and did it again. You know, that field, I mean, it was a grade one, but you got to face it, it wasn't a wise Dan in there, or it was a decent group of horses, but it was a great time to take a chance, take a shot. She hadn't won a grade one. She's doing great. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to breeze her three or four more times and run her, wait for the Woodbine Mile or something? So great move. She was doing well, and, kind of proves that you can do things a little out of the ordinary. You know, they're out of the ordinary for today. They're not out of the ordinary for 10, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, this is what
Mark
does
tend to run them when they're good.
Yeah, and Mark runs them when they're good. And the thing about Mark, you watch his horses, they don't really, I don't know if it's how he trains and whatever, but you watch his horses, you always watch the Derby. His Derby horses, they come back in 2 weeks and run the same race in the Preakness. Maybe even a little better, but a lot of it's just trip or whatever. But if you look at his horses, they don't have these big bounces. And then sometimes they'll tail off, and then he kind of does stop on them and back off. But he runs them a lot. They run well. And I've always said that. Derby to Preakness for Mark Cassie, his horses run back better than most people's.
And again, he likes to run them. It was also interesting in the winner's circle to hear him comment and compare Got Stormy to Teppan.
And he had said to Gary Barber when she won like an allowance race at Gulfstream, you know, in this winter, and said, you know, she reminds me of Teppan and what she does. And those are obviously big shoes to compare.
Absolutely.
To.
And they're pointing towards that Woodbine Mile. We're usually up that weekend. We're planning to be up there. So looking forward to seeing her in the Woodbine Mile. And some thoughts on the two-year-old race, the Saratoga Special. We'll watch the stretch run, green light go for Jimmy Jerkins, validated what was expected before the race. Although the Keneally horse, who runs second, took the early action in the betting and took some serious action. Noose runs second in here, but green light go looked pretty good, winning a stakes race. As far as two-year-olds at the meet, I thought this was a very nice performance. Obviously, in stakes action, a little bit earlier, Gozilla for Steve Asmussen looked pretty good on the two-year-old side as well. But Green Light Go looking pretty good in the Saratoga Special.
Yeah, I thought this was a good effort. I like the horse a lot just because he won first time out for Jimmy, which, you know, he doesn't really have that cranked up. I go to those two-year-olds for trainers who don't have them, you know, quite as cranked up as other guys. I thought this was a good performance. I thought Barkley Tag's two-year-old first timer was impressive for a guy that you know he doesn't have them. You know, this isn't their biggest day. I thought Jimmy's horse was good and Tag's horse was really good.
All right, let's move on to today. Get some thoughts in the jumper that will open things up on this Wednesday afternoon. While we talk, we're going to take a look at Snap Decision. This is going to be back on July 4th at Monmouth, maiden special weight event. Snap Decision is going to be the number 8 horse in here. Gets it done. I used Whitman's poetry on top. I went off his 3-1 last time and lost the rider. I'm going to look for that one to rebound with the rider staying on this afternoon. So I just switched the Jack Fishers up a little bit. Whitman poetry, but clearly off of this effort, Snap Decision is going to be the one to beat. Your thoughts in the opener tonight?
I think Snap Decision is really tough, and I wish I could come up with something more creative than that. But his first two races, he was at, they really had him in the back of the field. He had some rough trips. First race, he kind of just wanted to give him a school and teach him something. The second trip, he was too far back. And the third time, Willie McCarthy and Jack Fisher just said, look, let's, you know, he's the best horse in a race. He's a class flat horse. Just put him in the race. He led every step. He did it very impressively. Makes his fourth start. I think he's by far the horse to beat. Lovely horse out of the Phipps family. I mean, you go back and look at, I mean, he's running 90 buyers and, you know, those kind of races. Got to the 2 other than condition on the flat, which is, you know, really strong when you look back at who he's running against then. I mean, he's running against Slim Shady and Mr. Buff and those type of horses. So good flat form. The races up here now, they've taken a lot of the jumps out. So I think it does come back to, a lot of times comes back to flat form. So horse to beat, he'll put him up in the race again, I think. I'd like to see him up in the race. If he's out in the back, you know, where he has to get through traffic, I think he might be vulnerable that way. But I think they'll ride him forwardly. The obvious horse to beat. I kind of went Zanzi Wynn maybe in second. I just look back and his English form's pretty good. He was second Arch, my boy, who came up here and ran very well in the Novice Stake, which is a tougher condition than this. Not crazy about Ricky Hendricks putting blinkers on. I'm not sure it's a great sign of confidence when you put blinkers on a horse first time you go to run him. But form's pretty decent over there. I kind of lean that way, but I thought the standout was Snap Decision.
What was your take on Tom Garrow? Won the career debut over in Ireland. I wasn't sure what to do with that one.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I just wanted to see a little bit more. You know, he's only run the one time,
yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'd probably just sit and wait. Especially if he takes money, I'd rather wait and just see, you know, see how he runs. I need to watch that race. I haven't watched it yet. I was going to try to watch it later this morning and see what he looked like there. But, you know, you just don't have a lot of form to go on. He probably ran in some other races over there that aren't under rules. But, you know, decent effort. Leslie Young's been strong. She came up here and horses Rhodesian won, and she won a race at Colonial Downs the other day. So, and Tom Garner's very good. Good jockey. I think he's got a chance. I mean, I'd probably want to wait and just see one before I get committed.
So they run some jump races at Colonial?
Yeah, they're running two races a week at Colonial.
Oh, nice.
They run some maiden races down there every Saturday. So that's been some interesting.
Right in the heart of Hunt country,
yeah,
so it makes sense.
Yeah, it's a great spot. It's a lovely turf course. I mean, you kind of forget what that turf course is like. I mean, I've turned a computer on and watched opening day. I'm like, wow, look at this turf course. It's a beautiful track, and they've had some good jump races so far.
Have you actually been in person? Because it's kind of out in the...
I used to ride there. Can you imagine,
okay,
man? I'm so old, I rode a Colonial Downs. Can you imagine?
What was it called then?
It was Colonial.
Was
yeah,
it
it's always been Colonial.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a great spot.
But it's kind of...
Yeah, it's a neat spot. The hardest part with it is to get there. It's so impossible to get there. If you're traveling, if you're from the north, you've got to get through Baltimore, Washington, Richmond, Fredericksburg traffic. So that's really the only downside to it. Once you get there, it's fun to be there. It's a cool little country track, beautiful turf course, big field, very light, kind of fun atmosphere. It's a cool spot.
Yeah, I'd love to go sometime. Just before we let you go, let's talk a little steeplechase, because, again, steeplechase jockey for many years, and also kind of an owner, and you look for horses now through River D. You mentioned blinkers on Zanzi Wynn. Are equipment changes like that as common with steeplechase horses as with flat horses?
Probably a little less, but, I mean, there's guys that, I mean, I have Tom Voss would put blinkers on horses, and that was just a go-to move. I mean, you could just go to the window when he did it, especially up here. A lot of times you just want to try to put a little more speed in the horse when they come to the track. A lot of times they've been running at the hunt meets up and down hills, and so you put a little speed into them. But you can look at it the same, though. I mean, blinkers on, Lasix first time. You'll see the European horses. They'll run Tom Garrow, same thing, Lasix first time. But, yeah, you can look at it. I mean, I think it's some horses you can kind of wake up a little bit. It's very similar to the flat. I mean, it's just when you see a horse that might need a little bit of a wake-up call or a little bit of a, you know, especially up here, you just inject a little speed into a horse that might not have been showing it during the spring. It's very different here. I mean, this course is fast. Obviously, you have fewer jumps here, so it's much more speed-oriented than most of our races.
And am I right in assuming, and you can tell me as having ridden, whether it makes a difference. We look at a horse like Snap Decision, who broke the maiden and did so pretty nicely in the race we saw on the Monmouth course. Do some steeplechase horses just prefer this racetrack kind of a format as preferred to, as compared to the hunt meet?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, the good trainers will bring their racetrack or type horses here, horses with a little bit more speed, a little bit more flat form than and then some. Like I have a couple of horses that I don't bring here because they don't have the speed for that. They're more what we call a hunt meet horse. Yeah. They're more of a stamina type horse, more of a big galloping type horse. So some of those horses won't come here. But yeah, I love seeing flat form on a horse, flat form on the flat. I mean, if you look at a horse like Snap Decision, I mean, his flat form, I mean, he's a two other than. He's a proper horse. If, you know, it's Phipps Family and Shug, he's not really working for them, so they go on and sell him. But, you know, he could still be, he'd be competitive here in a two other than with those kind of numbers, that kind of form. So he's got flat form, and then he's had a win at Monmouth, which is obviously a flat, fast course. So I like seeing that. Some of the horses coming out of the hunt meets might just lack a little bit of speed. And sometimes they'll run second time better here once they get their kind of rhythm on a flat course where they're going faster. I kind of like seeing that. Sometimes they'll be caught out a little, but maybe the second time here they'll run a little better.
And again, you've got a great eye for a horse through River D you own, and you also do some consulting as well. So you look for a horse, you look for one of these type of flat horses, and you decide, oh, okay, this may be a nice jump horse, and either you get it or a client gets it. What's the game plan moving from the flat to the jumps? What's the time period and the training that they have to go through?
It actually doesn't take that long. I mean, you'd be surprised how fast they can turn around. I mean, usually at the quickest you may be 2 months. I mean, people will do it faster than that. But if a horse is sound and he's easy to ride and he's got a good attitude, they'll learn to jump pretty quickly. Ideally, you'd buy him in the fall. Like for me, I try to buy horses in October, November, maybe when the turf season's ending here, they're not good enough to go to Florida. Buy them then, freshen them up, turn them out, teach them to jump, and then they'll be ready to run in the spring. Like Snap Decision, that's a perfect scenario. He ran on the flat in November. Jack bought him after that. He gets to freshen him up for the winter, teach him how to jump, train off the farm, and then makes his first start in April. That's usually about typical. Whitman's Poetry, I actually bought him for Jack Fisher. And same thing, he had decent flat form, big, long stride and cool-looking horse, a little bit lost on the flat. He'd gotten through his two-other-than condition. And a lot of these horses just aren't good enough to get through their two-other-than condition.
As I'm looking, Renown had a quick turnaround. It was in the Laurel Turf Cup in September of last year and then came back in a jumps race in October.
Yeah, with him, he'd been jumping for a long time because Elizabeth Voss has had the horse a long time. So what she did, she bought that horse in England as a jump prospect, started running him on the flat, and obviously he's running great on the flat. I mean, he won the Elkhorn or the Sycamore or Keeneland. Yeah. I mean, he won some big races on the flat. So she just kept him on the flat and then was able to, when he couldn't, you know, he was 30 in the John's Call, finished, you know, ran okay in the Laurel Turf Cup. It's looking like his flat form's, you know, he's tailing off a little. He won one, the Secretariat's at the hunt meet. So if you look back at his flat form, he's not winning the Cape Henlope and the John's Call, Laurel Turf Cup, races that he might have won a year or two before. So she just made a quick turnaround and ran him over jumps. But she'd had him a long time, so he'd been jumping for years.
Interesting. Sean, as always, appreciate the visit. We'll again tout folks, Saratoga Special, Sean and Joe, Tom Law, and the team, the interns. The interns this year look like, are just from talking to, you'll have them through the whole meet. I think you have some that have already, they're either out of school or have been around. Yeah. So that's always nice because it's always the last week I kind of look at you guys and with some pity because the whole years the whole intern contingent takes off, which puts the workload on you guys. But this year looks like you'll have a little longer.
When you see Joe, Tom, or I covering the third, you know the interns have gone home, right? We're down there covering the New York bread.
I should also, we've talked about the alumni, and Anise was back in town. I guess she was helping you guys out, but she's with the Flying Start now. So another alumni goes on.
She's great. So that girl got out. I always said she got out of. She was she fell in love with racing in the North Dakota State Fair, and she got out of there, came to Saratoga, and ended up on the Darley Flying Start program, which is great.
I had a chance to chat with her, and she's been doing international things, so I wish her a lot of good luck. And again, comes out of the Saratoga Special School. Pick it up, go online as well. This is horseracing.com. Sean, as always, appreciate the visit. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Matt Hegarty is in the house. We'll talk a little Jockey Club Roundtable, Albany Law Conference, and more right after this. Stay tuned.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contests, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, Matt Hegarty from the Daily Racing Forum covers the hard news for the Daily Racing Forum and was in town looking at the Albany Law Conference, the Jockey Club Roundtable, and more. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you on. Always a timed visit beyond the Law Conference and the Jockey Club Roundtable. We'll hit on those in a second, but I was perusing some of your articles in the Racing Forum last night, and one of the most recent ones, legally, things went through maybe a couple of weeks ago, but the oversight board gave the thumbs up to the Belmont Arena construction. So they changed the schedule of Saratoga in anticipation that the shovel would break ground a while ago, but they still had to wait for the OKs. Now it looks like that has all been done, and they will start construction on the arena.
Yeah, and it'll probably lead to some schedule upheaval next year as well. There's going to be a lot of construction there, a lot of construction necessary. And then it's probably going to kick off the process where people decide long-term what's going to happen with Belmont Park. Whether or not there's going to be a total teardown there, whether or not there's going to be massive renovations, whether or not New York is going to have three tracks in the long-term future. So there's a lot of stuff that that is going to get kicked off by the construction of that project.
But now we're underway, at least, so that's good news. All right, let's go back to Albany Law and get some feedback on that. I went to the morning panels because one of them, I wanted to know whether I would still be getting a paycheck, as it were. The morning panel is looking at survival of the industry. First panel, equine welfare, can the sport survive? Second panel, which again, our company president, John Signor, was on the panel along with David O'Rourke from the New York Racing Association. But the second panel, New York OTBs, can they survive? And then the third panel, New York Harness Racing, can it survive? Now, it seemed like all panels seemed to agree that these entities would survive, but maybe with a little tweaking. Certainly on the equine welfare, can the sport survive? That's timely given what's happened over the past couple of months. And I did really like the talk from Jennifer Durenberger, that she kind of appealed to those of us in the industry and that enjoy horse racing to kind of get a little more informed and have that elevator speech ready for the people who aren't informed when they come up and ask about this sport. I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah, she, points out that it's a minority that wants to end racing right now. But you have to understand, as she pointed out, that it's a minority that really supports racing as well. There's a vast middle in there. And I know, when I leave Lexington and don't go to a racing town, the first thing that people ask me all year was what is going on at Santa Anita. And you have to be able to explain not only what did happen out there, but also what the industry is doing or not doing to address it. And so she brought up some good points that the industry really does need to focus on that really large middle that doesn't actually have an opinion either way right yeah. now, but they do want their questions answered.
And also the economic impact that, that horse racing has. I think people, if you have those numbers at your fingertips, or at least a basic understanding of that, I think that's important as well. And a lot of people just kind of ignore that in the conversation. The number of people that are employed by the racing industry, not only directly, but in ancillary factors mm-hmm. as well.
And plus the fact that the vast majority of those people that are employed take very good care of their horses,
oh, absolutely.
Very much care about their horses, and they're in this because this is a passion for them. And I know I had to communicate that to a lot of people that talked to me this year about Santa Anita, that, you know, the stories of the cruel horse trainer are very rare. You know, the stories of the people who want to get rid of a horse are rare. The industry does have major problems despite that, especially in aftercare, especially in raising enough money to care for these athletes after they're done. So I don't think just having that elevator speech is enough. The racing industry needs to go through some fundamental reforms. They need to address these issues head on, and they need to start looking to the future to do something to reduce that fatality rate. No matter where it is, it's never going to be low enough, but you've got to be trending down.
Yeah, you certainly have to at least be working on it and have that be a very visible factor. The other two panels, New York OTBs, can they survive? New York Harness Racing, can it survive? Again, listening to both of those panels, our friend Dick Powell was the moderator of the Harness Racing panel, Teresa Gennaro, the moderator of the OTB panel, and again, John Signor was one of the panelists. It sounded like in both of those instances, recognition that we're in a different world than we were 30 or 40 years ago, but maybe the legislation hasn't kept pace, and both of them maybe need some tweaking as far as that kind of a thing.
Yeah, the New York OTB system with the six, you know, kind of county-owned and operated geographical companies, it may have made some sense at the beginning. I'm not sure with the rise of account wagering, with the, you know, total dominance of interstate simulcasting as far as generating revenues for the racing industry, that it makes much sense now. There needs to be some fundamental change with OTB. They need to be able to work with the other constituencies. The patchwork of laws that govern where revenue goes to in this state from OTB bets, the surcharge, all of those need to be wiped clean. You know, I do think that New York Racing would benefit, and including the OTB companies, the ones that still want to be in the business, would benefit if everybody just agreed to scrap the law and start over. Build it back up to where it makes sense, to where you can make the proper investments, where you want brick and mortars, make sure that there's one statewide account wagering system. You can generate all kinds of additional revenue from that scale and eliminate all kinds of redundant costs. So I do think that that's something where if New York OTB is going to survive, and some of those county corporations are going to survive, you got to start from scratch almost.
Yeah, and that seemed to be the consensus.
Sorry to say that on a capital
no,
TV show.
No, I think it's just the logic, and I think the panel was kind of in agreement on that, that we just have to kind of step back and look at laws that were written 20 or 30 years ago and maybe update them in the face of 21st century reality. So I think that is the reality. Those were the morning sessions. The afternoon kind of shifted focus. And one of the things that was a focus of the morning or the afternoon panels, and then translated it over to the Jockey Club roundtable as well, was the shift to maybe to category one as far as how stewards adjudicate races. So again, talk a little bit about the category one difference as compared to what we're doing currently here in the United States and what was discussed at really both of the venues.
Yeah, the difference between category one and category two is sometimes a little hard to communicate, but under category one, which is in use in just about every racing jurisdiction in the world other than Canada, the U.S., and Turkey, the stewards are not supposed to disqualify a horse unless it's clear that the horse would not have won the race if the interference had not occurred. So the net result is that there's far fewer disqualifications, far fewer. In Japan, they went over, I think, in 2010, something like that. You know, one year they had 38 disqualifications, and the next year they had three. So there's far less disqualifications under the Category 1 system, and supporters of it seem to believe that it benefits owners and bettors, that owners and bettors are more comfortable with the Category 1 rules, and they also say that it's more consistent. Well, it has to be more consistent if you're not disqualifying horses, you know. So that's just it's kind of a result that would be expected from a system like that. So under Category 2, which is obviously, you know, in place here, there are far more disqualifications, and those rules say that the stewards are supposed to determine if a horse impeded another horse. If so, then that horse is supposed to be placed behind the impeded horse. Probably a lot of this talk on Category 1 is being triggered by the Derby result, and I think it's important for viewers to know that under Category 1, the consensus of almost all stewards around the world is that there would not have been a disqualification in the Derby. So if you're comfortable with that, then I suppose you're comfortable with Category 1 rules. If you're not, then you're probably not comfortable with the switch. Now, the supporters of the Category 1 system say that there is a transition period, that people can be, you know, a little confused by there not being many disqualifications, but then they grow used to it. I don't have an opinion either way right now, considering I have a strong opinion on the Derby.
Oh, do you want to share that?
No, my opinion is the horse should have been disqualified. Oh, that, well, even in Category 1, the horse should have been disqualified.
Yeah, and people asked me after the race what I thought, and I agreed. I thought once they took a look, the horse had to come down.
You're saying that War of Will was somehow not impeded by that, and you have an accurate determination that horse couldn't have won the race, it just doesn't. It fails a gut check for me. It really does.
And so the difference between Category 1 and Category 2 then becomes, in what we're doing now, a horse is making a winning move, comes by and bumps another horse, and that horse loses second by that much. Currently, the winner would come down and be placed third, because the stewards would look and say, well, the bump certainly made enough a difference that this horse would have gotten second, whereas Category 1, no change would be made.
Well, under Category 1, apparently you're supposed to say if there was an interference, which horse would have won. And if the horse that initiated the contact would have won
clearly
without
best
interference, then the horse doesn't come down. I just don't see how that's not,
I think it's
subjective.
Yeah, and I also think it's just as big a can of worms, just in another way.
Right, but I've had discussions with people about it, and they say, yeah, those discussions have always, you know, have always preceded the transition. France and Germany went over the last couple of years. There was a steward that quit in France because he was so upset about the transition. Now, according to the supporters, he later came back and said, no, I think you guys made the right decision. But yeah, this discussion that we're having now has preceded the rule change in every other country.
And I didn't realize, so Category 2 is literally us, Canada, and Turkey.
Us, Canada, and Turkey, right. But, you know, we don't do other things, you know, that are perfectly all right in other countries either. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to go with
No, yeah, I just didn't realize it was that limited.
Yeah, it's that limited.
Like I say, to me, they both have pluses, and this does not seem like a silver bullet to me by any means.
No, I mean, I think what it really does is it favors favorites. Because if a steward is going to look down and say, would this horse have won without the interference, they're going to look at the past performances that all the bettors are looking at, too, and say, well, this horse is a better horse on paper, so obviously he would have won. So I think you have less complaints because less favorites get taken down. You know, one of the reasons why Maximum Security's disqualification was so controversial is because so many people had money on the horse. I did, too. I had him on top of a bunch of trifecta tickets. But at the same time, I like to think I'm a rational person and will judge it despite that, and that's what the steward should do. So I think it does really favor, it favors the horse with the lower odds.
Well, again, it was discussed at the Albany Law Conference. It was discussed at the Jockey Club Roundtable. Do you get any sense of where the industry is moving? Is there a push to go in that direction?
I was telling a friend that I'm going to be wrong on this one. I'm going to lose this fight. We're going to go to Category 1.
Right.
So that would be my prediction.
Also, at the roundtable, the Horse Racing Integrity Act was talked about. I had Sean Smealy, who is the executive director of the Coalition for horse racing integrity. I talked to him the other day on the show, and we talked a little bit about this. Paul Tonko, our representative, had a news conference out in front of the facility a couple of weeks ago. But again, this was talked about, and literally the morning I had Sean on last week, last Friday maybe, as the show ended, a news release came out that a lot of prominent trainers are now on board, too. Mm-hmm. What was the discussion on the Horse Racing Integrity Act?
Yeah, so the Jockey Club made a major push for the Horse Racing Integrity Act at the roundtable, throughout the roundtable, and their push now is that this would be an answer to some of the problems that horse racing is facing that were brought on by the Santa Anita situation. There's a lot of debate within the racing community as to whether or not that structure that is created by the bill would address some of those problems, and that's why there's a parallel effort going on right now in which a lot of the industry groups, some of which who don't support the HIA, are trying to put together another federal bill that might be more closely tailored to safety and welfare concerns rather than just medication policy and drug testing. There are elements in the HIA that rub some people the wrong way, especially the LASIK prohibition. And so this alternate path is trying to put some of the more controversial parts of that bill to the side, come up with a structure that almost looks like the safety and integrity accreditation program, except make that mandatory and have it controlled by a board that looks similar to the creation of that the HIA would create.
Yeah, and again, as I say, I had a discussion about this the other day. The press release came out with some prominent trainers, but it is still controversial or debated within the end. There are two sides to it.
Right.
And LASIK is probably one of the major things people are looking at.
Yeah, and with the list of the trainers that did sign that, it's the backside is in no way just a monoculture. There are different opinions on there too. Now, horsemen's organizations, the leadership of horsemen's organizations, are sticking to the no, we don't want the ban. But obviously, the membership, there's a lot of opinions back there on that.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Also noted in your article covering the roundtable, I was interested in this. I didn't realize it, but the Jockey Club, in light of what happened out at Santa Anita, had hired a crisis management team to kind of react, which I think. And that may be the key word, to react. I think the industry has to be a little more proactive as opposed to reactive, but at the very least, they have to have their message set to react. It seems like over the past decade or so, as these kind of situations have arisen, they haven't been ready. So maybe a crisis management team can point them in the wrong way, in the right way.
Yeah, well, but a lot of that is a function of the competing interests in racing. I mean, the different constituencies of racing don't agree on a lot of things. And so when there is a crisis and everybody wants a unified response, well, the industry is not unified. They're just not. There are competing interests, from a large number of different alphabet organizations. There are bad relationships between some of these people. They don't trust each other. Before you expect a unified response to a crisis, you better get the industry unified. And that's the problem. There are a lot of organizations in this sport, and a lot of them have bad relationships with each other.
Yeah, and again, given what happened earlier this year, hopefully things can come together a little bit and we can make it more of a unified front to address it, because that was kind of an overarching theme. Again, kicking off with the Albany Law Conference, survival of the industry, and in light of what has happened in the first few months of the year, that is an issue we all have to address. So again, hopefully the industry does come together, and there was conversation about that over the past week at the two conferences. And one of the things I wanted to touch on before I let you go that was also brought up, Mike Mulvihill talking about Fox Sports, who do the great job with the Fox Sports MSG show, a lot of coverage up here, New York Racing, particularly up here at Saratoga, lots of hours of coverage. But they're talking about hopping into the sports betting arena and maybe having a wagering platform that would include horse racing.
Yeah, they're going to be probably the first, well, you would expect, they're going to be the first broadcasting company to get into the sports wagering arena. He said that they're going to launch in all of the states that have already legalized it. Obviously, right now, you can't, you know, commingle those bets across state lines, so it's a... I think there's a lot more details that they need to work out. But he also indicated that that he wanted racing to provide signals to their sports betting app. And I think they're going to run into a couple problems there. The market-leading account wagering companies are owned by racetracks. Churchill makes a lot of money off TwinSpires. Naira Bets is firmly planted here. And I don't know if they're going to want to make room to cut another person in on the industry's revenues. So that's going to be interesting to watch to see where they go with that. Because, you know, Mike is obviously very well respected in the racing industry. He's a big racing fan. He loves the sport. He got, you know, that coverage on to FS2 of Naira, which is just unbelievable. Yeah. How many hours they're doing. So you hope that the industry is able to make peace with them because they're probably be a pretty good long-term partner.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I was interested to read that whole scenario. Again, industry gets together every year for the Albany Law Conference and the Jockey Club Roundtable, and every year we have Matt come in to give some coverage because he's over there covering for the Daily Racing Forum. You can pick up the hard copy and follow his coverage, not just of those, but of all the, as I say, kind of more the hard news side of the game. Is that fair?
Yeah, everything but a race.
Yeah. And DRF.com as well. Although you do enjoy the races. Beyond that, now you're going to be in town for
a
few days playing around. So
yeah, I got a weekend off, so it's going to be fun.
Good luck on that.
Yeah. All right.
It's been a tough meet so far for me.
I'm waiting for it to get tough. I had a nice day on Saturday.
Ah, there you go. All he needs one. And we'll send you back home to Kentucky a happy person.
Like the Philly, so.
Yeah, there you go. All right. And again, Matt Haggerty, Daily Racing Forum, hard copy, DRF.com. We'll take a break. When we come back, Teresa Gennaro will talk about what's coming up this week on track and off the weekly calendar right after this.
Looking for a fantastic meal? Stop by Malcolm's, a unique farm-to-table restaurant experience. Located at 617 Union Street in Schenectady, Malcolm's offers locally grown fresh foods, mouth-watering flavors, an enhanced drink menu, and terrific service. Malcolm's is a sure bet during Saratoga season. Make your reservation today.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Racing Across America as we kick off another week here at Saratoga with a beautiful Saratoga morning. And adding to that, our friend Teresa Gennaro with the weekly calendar. Good morning.
Good morning. It is gorgeous.
It's perfect,
out.
Isn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
Chamber of Commerce day, as they say.
It really is.
Yeah. Humidity has left the scene. Man, they're crazy workers here.
Were they?
Oh, man. They were enjoying the morning. And there was a slew of them out here when we first got to the track this morning. But, again, a gorgeous day. If you don't have plans, come on up to the track. And as far as making plans, hopefully we'll give you some ideas with the weekly calendar.
Lots going on, as always.
Jump in with today. There is a book signing downtown, The Horseman's Word.
Yeah, this has been kind of an amazing summer for racing books. I feel like there have been so many that have been published recently. I have not read this. It's historical fiction set in Saratoga, obviously with connection to the horses, as you can see there from the title. And the author will be down at Northshire tonight on Broadway talking about the book and signing copies.
And as you say, historical fiction, I think it's the 1800s Saratoga. So that should be kind of interesting, I would think. As always, Thursday means Parting Glass in the Indies radio show. Interesting lineup of guests today. And I didn't make it last week was the first one I missed, but I'll try to put it on the agenda again this week. Is where else am I going to get my Thursday night hot turkey sandwich but the Parting Glass for the Indy radio show on Thursday?
He's got Joel Rosario, jockey, having a great meet up here so far. Handicapper Anthony Stabile and Christophe Clément, who, in addition to being a top-notch trainer, also co-bred the horse that set a new record for sales with the New York Bred Sale on Monday afternoon. Philly went for $775,000, and Christophe co-bred it with his longtime partners at Winter Quarter Farm and Waterville Lake, Richard Leahy, and some others. So pretty big deal for Mr. Clément.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find the exact quote here. It was purchased by Larry Best of OXO Equine, the prominent Instagram last year out in Southern California. But I have the quote. this is bizarre. $775,000. It's a record at the sale. Mr. Best is quoted as saying, "I've never shopped the Saratoga sale before. I didn't even intend to shop today, but I had nothing to do this afternoon, so I came over and looked at some horses, and bam, $775,000.
Yeah, said he'd seen the filly for the first time 2 hours before. I got a Facebook message from a friend of mine today that said, "You know, I did the same thing yesterday with a Kit Kat."
I've done that. Yeah, exactly.
Just
I've done that before with like milk in the supermarket. I was going to get the newspaper, but I needed milk too. All right, let's move on. Another book signing again on a good summer for books. And this one's a lot of fun. Certainly a prominent name in horse racing history. Sir Barton book. There's a signing on Friday.
Yeah, Jennifer Kelly. She's really active on social media. Follow her on Twitter. She's got lots of fun things to say. She's very, very excited about coming to Saratoga. So Sir Barton did this in 1919. And this was really before anybody even thought about this as a Triple Crown or a series of races. And I believe that the term Triple Crown wasn't even coined until much after Sir Barton. But you can find out all the details on that by talking to Jennifer Kelly, going to pick up a copy of her book.
Yeah, that's true. The Triple Crown wasn't the Triple Crown until two or three of them had won it.
Yeah.
And then some newspaper flack coined that.
Charlie Hatton is sometimes credited with it. But like so many other things in racing history, not really pinned down. Maybe Jennifer has it pinned down, and she can tell you about it.
One of racing history is the lack of racing history.
Yeah.
As compared to things like baseball and whatnot.
Yeah.
But hopefully, people are working on that. Hopefully it gets better. I want to move on to Sunday because this is kind of near and dear to me, too. I lost my brother this year to pancreatic cancer. Dominic Galluccio is going to be saluted, as he is annually, with the Lustgarten Foundation Day on Sunday. That will include out in the Jockey Silks area, autographs from the jockeys. And again, it's a great cause. It's a really insidious disease. As I say, my brother passed away earlier this year. We lost our friend Mike Jarbo a while ago to that as well, up in the press box, and he'd done some work for us also. So again, support this on Sunday, but you can do it in a fun way too by getting those autographs.
And
all the jockeys show up.
Yeah, I mean, Dominic, I think it was 3 weeks from diagnosis to when he passed away. It went incredibly quickly. As you can see in this photo, he was known for his very colorful jackets in the paddock, and lots of folks will be turning out to wear purple, which is the signature color of the Lustgarten Foundation and pancreatic cancer support.
Purple, being the appropriate color that pulled the picture. And I'm just looking here. Have the Lenny book signing as well.
That's on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's where I was looking up. The Lustgarten is Sunday, but just wanted to go back to Saturday because our friend Lenny Shulman has a signing over at the museum also.
Writing about another Triple Crown winner. This time we have Jennifer Kelly talking about the first Triple Crown winner, and we have Lenny Shulman writing about the most recent one, Justify. And they will both be there at these weekly Saturday morning socials at the Racing Museum. Great opportunity to have these two book-ended major events in racing, the first and the most recent Triple Crown winner. So, again, go over there. The admission is free, and the museum will have books available for purchase.
Guaranteed to be entertaining with Lenny. Hope to have Lenny on the show. Annually we do, so look forward to plugging him in at some point here because, as I say, always entertaining. All right, let's move on because one of our favorite charities up here, we've talked about it many times, horse racing charities, the TRF, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, and they have the barbecue coming up on one of the dark days coming up next week.
Yes, they've had a slew of events this summer, really every week. And here's an opportunity. I think it's $30, very reasonably priced. You can go out. I think they're going to have some horses there, barbecue, live music, and, as you said, going to a terrific cause, supporting the life of thoroughbreds after they left the track.
We like it. Food, horses, hopefully a nice Saratoga night. You can't beat that.
Yeah.
Also on Tuesday, the screening of this sounds like a fun film, Born to Reign, the movie, with an interesting topic as well.
Talking about history,
yeah.
Very niche here, but the history of some racing luminaries, and you can see them on the screen there. There again, we have Sir Barton coming up, John Nehru, Jack Vanberg, and Marion Vanberg, all of whom hail from the great state of Nebraska. And so this really focuses on these people and animals so important to racing that all came from Nebraska.
And over at the museum. Correct?
Yeah, it'll be at the museum. If you go on brooklynbackstretch.com, you will find a little trailer for it so you can get a sense of it as well.
And again, the calendar, the season calendar on brooklynbackstretch.com as well. Also links to all the writing you've done during the meet so people can catch up with that as well. Always a lot of fun also because you're doing coverage for, as always, various venues.
Mm-hmm. Blood Horse, Saratogian, New York Breeder Magazine.
And the New York Times.
And the New York Times.
I put that right into my microphone.
Thank you.
That
was lovely.
The coverage of Mary Lou Whitney, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, don't leave out the Times.
That's a good one.
All right. Some great events coming up, as always, here, both on track and off. Great racing this afternoon, throughout the weekend as well. Going to take a break and come back and wrap things up for this Wednesday morning. Want to thank Sean and Joe, Sean Clancy. As I say, it's Sean or Joe, but we had Sean this week, Matt Hagerty, and Teresa Gennaro. As I say, thank you for the calendar.
Great to be here.
And we'll come back after this and wrap it up on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Bridgestone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. We'll wrap things up on this Wednesday. Don't forget, it's a prize wheel day down at the Clubhouse Racebook. Go in during the day. Folks will get a chance to spin the prize wheel. Vouchers, racing swag and whatnot. Should be a lot of fun, so keep that in mind. Tomorrow, Beat the Handicapper online contest. Fan Appreciation Day also tomorrow at Sportsman's Bowl in Schenectady. Fan Appreciation Day in Amsterdam, my old burg, on Friday. So keep that in mind as well. Don't forget, promos and events can be found at CapitalOTB.com. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. We are, of course, right back tomorrow, Thursday morning, 9 o'clock with the Handicapper Support, 10 o'clock with more Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You've been watching Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life. Woodbine Racetrack. Pick, bet, and cheer on world-class horse racing north of the border. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.